Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
If you want to practice and improve your English in a fun and creative way, please visit our website www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Okay.
Three of us are together.
And the first one with a professional microphone.
True.
We're good to know each other with the professional mic. Mike. Yeah, hello, so Mike.
Yeah.
Well, the weather in St. Petersburg is very October-like, but hopefully it will change.
But when we went to Pavlovsk, when we were... We said that you to be Pushkining. Can you do...
Pavlovsking.
So anyway, when we were Pavlovsking,
the weather was good.
The weather was brilliant.
Well,
yeah.
I ordered a good weather for that day.
Specifically for that day.
Yeah, I have contacts, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You call them.
Because when you're not planning to go anywhere, it's okay to have some rain.
Yeah.
But if you have some outdoor plans, outdoor activities, then I have to make sure everything's good. So yeah.
It's good to always to have
what
a
did,
person
what did it
with
cost
contacts.
You?
I have contacts, so it cost me nothing. So I just...
Is it a favor for favor? Like, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours?
Not exactly. It's just because I'm a good person.
Yeah,
that's the main reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I actually wanted to discuss with you publicly this issue that that is happening right now with one of the social groups in Vkontakte. What happened?
So we have the copyright issue because I draw those doodles, linguist of doodles, and our doodles always have a link to our website and a sort of like it's hard to add a watermark to it because it looks quite messy.
Yeah.
So I always make like a signature thing, linguistov.ru, and a link to the doodle page. And some evil monsters that represent the group, what was the name?
Friendly English.
That's total bastards, actually. So they decided that they are so good at photoshopping that they can delete all the information from our doodles and publish them, without this information. It just amazes me how they, you know, they have the time to do that. What's the purpose of deleting all this information just out of pure spite?
This is just the pretext that they did it because we left some spam messages.
Oh, so
they had to defend the community somehow, and that's what they did. But I think the real reason was simply to keep something posted, and I think they didn't really have anything to post, and then they discovered these fantastic doodles, and they thought that, wow, that's good, but we know Linguistov and we don't like them, so let's delete this information.
So you think that is kind of personal?
I think so, yeah. And or probably maybe they just didn't want to advertise us, so they just decided to delete this information. But what really made me mad was that they didn't even try to hide that they did it. They said it, oh well, we do it because we are going to continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what really upset me. Right now it's just the thing that we are going to make sure they delete all the doodles from there.
Well, we just want to send a message, a strong message.
We just want us
don't
to be heard.
Yeah.
Do not ever do that.
don't
examples.
Don't mess with Linguistov.
Yeah. And what pleased me was that Daniel received that message mm-hmm. from one of our followers.
Yes, thank you, Svetlana. It was very pleasant of you to have noticed and to have told us.
It's just nice to know that there's someone supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
We have an army.
I guess, yes.
Maybe it's envy or...
Yeah,
something.
Yeah.
I guess so. I think that it's very personal. Personal grudge against us.
This is so stupid.
It's so,
so stupid.
It's so, you know, like a very kindergarten level.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even have any feeling towards someone I have never met in the real life.
Yeah.
And especially I can't keep grudges on someone who sent a spam message.
This is so ridiculous.
Three times. Yeah. And you are going to draw a sarcastic doodle.
Maybe not one.
We'll have to create a whole album.
Yeah, maybe like a comic book.
Yeah.
Small comic.
Yeah, fighting friendly English.
Oh, that's a very good, topic for the next story.
Yes. Linguistof
against
friendly
English.
Or how Linguistof... or how friendly English committed suicide.
Yeah, because there have to be, you know, the good guys and the bad guys.
Well, of course.
Now we have the bad guys.
Exactly.
We are supposed to have an introduction. I don't have an introduction.
I guess that was the introduction.
Yeah, so, okay.
Haven't we sent Introduction to Hell in the previous podcast?
No, I thought we still have to keep up the tradition of doing the introduction. It's quite... But okay, now, again, to hell with introduction.
Conflict in Kashmir, one and only of the Indian states divided between Hindus and Pakistani Muslims, witnesses new participants. The stand between two peoples is 66 years old. It has been active since 1947 when India and Pakistan won independence from Great Britain. All through the Cold War, the conflict was raging. The peak of fear was reached in the end of the 20th century when both countries obtained nuclear weapons. However, by now, groups of militants remain strong only in the deep south of Kashmir. Most economic and tourist zones are now quiet and functioning. The confrontation between Indian security forces and Islamic militants seems to have died away. The thing is that it only seems to have so. While extremists are few, they are still supported by a number of people, some supporters being young men and even children from educated and prosperous families. They are ignited by militant rhetoric and try to ignite their relatives and friends with their energy. The goal of the militants is to return the whole or the part of Kashmir to Pakistan to live there in Islam. The problem is that these young militants are inexperienced and security forces detect and neutralize them easily. What amazed me is how children from educated and prosperous families, I stress, they leave their homes without telling anything to
mm-hmm.
their parents and, arm themselves and fight.
So they support the Muslims, the extremists.
Mm.
The extremists.
Yes, this is so. It is at the same time a religious and territorial conflict. Now it's not as harsh as it used to be, but with these new participants, who knows? And in the article where from I took that information, it was said that their fathers of these children, of which the youngest is 15, they supported their offspring, and the fathers were the heads of colleges and such intelligent people.
Mm-hmm.
They are supportive of purely terroristic actions. I know that one of the world's most influential terrorist organizations, the Muslims, was established by two brothers, one of which was 14.
At 14, I guess I was still playing the dolls. with my friend, because we were crazy. My crazy Lena, if I told you
everybody
about her.
Knows about
yeah.
her. You don't need to say she's a yeah. Exactly. You know her. She's almost like a friend. You know?
You have to meet her one day.
Of course I will.
Mm-hmm.
Does she live in Chelny?
Yeah, she lives in Chelny.
Okay, we'll have a party.
She likes this the place where you took me to drink beer, to try beer. Yeah, it's one of her favorite places,
oh,
so
really?
I guess we can meet there.
Okay.
We can invite her.
It's settled then.
Yes, all right. we liked creating some interesting stories. We even had, I guess, 3 or 4 notebooks where we drew some comic strips. And they were not large, they were like 3 or 4 pages. And were, you know, like rudimentary, just drawing, sometimes colored, sometimes not. And it was distributed again all over the school, so everyone knew about it. It was like with our podcast, you know, the first podcast on these tapes. We had like 5 or 4 tapes. So the next, the continuation of this was this comic books, let's say so. We still, at the very end of our school, when we were like the 10th year or 11th year, we liked I like to go to her to stay overnight, and we had those dolls, you know, Barbie dolls, and for us it was a medium to create new stories. So we still, you can say that we played with them, but it was not play. It was very serious, because every time we created new stories, some detectives, some horrors, someone killed someone betrayed someone cheated on someone. So it was very cool. So yeah, at 14, I was still playing Barbie dolls.
When I was about 12, 13, I had a friend, and we also did pretty much the same thing as
mm-hmm.
you guys did. But, well, it was maybe not that creative, but
uh-huh.
still a lot of imagination was used. And we had our own imaginary country, which was called Chawichu.
Okay.
Yeah, and we started this in winter time, so we were just running around on the neighborhood and imagining something. Like, it was like a whole fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
But what surprises me right now is, well, I'm no longer friends with this girl, but she grew up into such an ordinary girl.
Really?
Like, really, like, there's nothing, I'm so surprised. Where did all her imagination go? She was so imaginative and so creative as a child, but then suddenly, maybe at the age of 15, she became so common,
mm-hmm.
so ordinary, yeah. So that's surprising.
Yeah.
So did Lena remain creative?
Yeah. I think with years she grows crazier
even
and crazier.
It progresses.
Yes. I'm just really scared what would happen in like 10 or 20 years.
Well, that's even that would even be more exciting for me to meet her.
Yeah.
As for me, when I was 14, I was mad about having high grades at school. Yes, it was demanded from me. About Lego, it also is an expanse, a great expanse for imagination. And about, well, fiction.
So did you have a creative friend?
A crazy,
no.
Creative friend?
A crazy body?
Actually, no.
Well, which is also a good thing.
Yeah. I also like to, you know, to stay by myself, to play with my dolls. My it was very easy for my mother, because she could just leave me alone, yeah. And sometimes I fell asleep right
yeah.
there.
So just go there. Here's a pencil. Now play. Yeah. And she'll just go shopping for 4 days.
I think like 2 months or 3 months ago, we were trying to get some stuff from, you know, the top shelves where you have like over the corridor. There are sort of
like an attic, like something.
Yes, something like that.
Yeah.
So we had to get some stuff from there, but it was all crowded with my dolls, all the toys that I had in my childhood. So we had to get it out first. Well, for me it was exciting and interesting, so I started to, you know, to check what I had when I was a child. And it amazed me so much that, well, we didn't have that a lot of choice in shops when we grew up.
Which made us even more creative.
Yeah, because everything that I had, starting, I don't know, from clothes for my dolls and ending with the furniture, it was all made by hand. And I had a lot of, you know, teacups, I had some bags, everything was made by me. So I had some pictures, so I had the whole house, and it was all handmade. And the wardrobe itself, the clothes, I sew them just by myself. And I was so proud of myself at the time. I thought, that's exciting, because right now you can buy all this stuff in the shop, and we didn't have that so many things. But anyway, my parents weren't that rich to buy those things for me.
I think it's not that cool to buy.
No, of
stuff.
Course not.
It gives you so much more pleasure to
mm-hmm.
to create, to do everything.
Yeah.
Did you handmade your own dolls?
Actually, I did, but
a voodooist.
But not those that I had at home, because they were the, you know, proper Barbie dolls. But my parents had a tendency to send me to our country house, to my grandmother, and I hated that place, because all my cousins, everyone who lived there, they were older than me, and I was all by myself again, alone. I had to make something to play with. So my mother had an old Zinger sewing machine and a lot of different fabrics. So yeah, I created my own dolls again. So because I spent like two months, so I had to do something. And I hated going out because there were bees and I was scared of bees. So I remained at home with the sewing machine. Goodness, that's so sad.
You're afraid of bees, but not afraid of dragonflies. How is that possible?
No, right now I'm not afraid of bees. It was just when I was a child, I was very small. I wasn't afraid of dragonflies. I was afraid of bees because they could sting you. And dragonflies, they don't do that.
Oh, but they're abominable.
They're not
and
abominable.
Dreadful.
They're pretty. They're pretty.
They're pretty abominable.
I agree with you, because butterflies, some people say that butterflies are pretty, but for me, they were quite scary. Yeah.
Butterflies are pretty.
They are pretty.
Just don't look them in the eye.
Okay.
avoid
eye their
contact.
Yes. True. A new scientific explanation for near-death experiences. Many people on their deathbeds. Is it yours? Whose is it? Oh, I know.
Must be mine.
He broke my umbrella.
Oh, bastard.
Oh.
How did he break it?
Because it's an automatic umbrella, so you have to push a button to open it and to close it.
Okay.
But here, he got used to the umbrellas that you have to close manually, so with your hands. So he started with all his force. He thought that something is wrong, must be wrong. And he couldn't close it. And now it's like it's half closed. And finally, he realized that it is an automatic umbrella, that you have to push a button. But it's already too late. So it doesn't go anywhere, so it's broken.
Got stuck.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a pretty umbrella. I haven't even tried it.
Now you're umbrella-less.
So of course, I'm absolutely umbrella-less, yeah. It was a very pretty one.
Unumbrella-ed.
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 Yeah, that's a beautiful word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what was I reading?
So the news about near-death experience.
Yeah. A new scientific explanation for near-death experiences. Many people on their deathbeds report seeing a long corridor with a brilliant light at the end of it. Could it be heaven? Probably not. New research shows that these near-death visions may be linked to intense electrical surges that cause hyperreal thoughts in our brains. A team of researchers found that during clinical death, rats exhibit a surge in brain activity with features similar to a highly aroused human brain. It's long been assumed that once the brain is cut off from its blood supply, it stops. Sorry,
it stops
functioning. But the evidence suggests that the brain is capable of well-organized electrical activity, specifically conscious processing, immediately following cardiac arrest, despite the fact that the brain experiences a sharp decrease in oxygen, and was previously thought to be non-functional during this time. As for the light people see, the researchers saw cross-frequency coupling where different electrical waves work together in the rat's brains after cardiac arrest. They found coupling between low-frequency gamma waves and theta waves, as well as low-gamma waves with alpha waves. Alpha-gamma coupling is a feature of visual activation or visual awareness, which includes internal visualization, that is, imagination. Scientists suggest that this particular brain activity could be behind the bright lights some people see during their near-death experience.
Were you trying to teach us a Latin alphabet?
I don't even know what theta or... I guess it's theta.
Some waves.
Some waves, yeah. Anyway, so this is
any
a
wave,
sort of...
Any waves.
Waves, yeah.
It's disappointing. Those scientists, they always ruin hopes.
That's
and
they are
against
imagination. You can choose not to believe it.
But it's interesting why the scientific community is always trying to explain the unexplainable.
I guess it's quite normal for people.
Why don't they just leave some hope, as Daniel said, for those people who are going to die?
Mm-hmm.
They do want to have some kind of heaven after death.
They deprive our brain of work for imagination. You know, I imagine things, then I read a scientific explanation.
So it's not really imagination, it's just some process in your brain. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, it's like we talk about the tendency in zombie films that right now they explain it by infection, etc. So some real things, but not like when people rise from the dead. Just, I don't know.
Why don't they
zombies isn't a near-death experience.
No, I'm just giving...
after-death experience, I would say.
I imagine commercials of near future. They want to be a zombie for 10 minutes. Come to our company.
Anyway, have you ever heard of any people who experienced that?
Well, actually,
the tunnel. The end of the tunnel.
Idea of this corridor with the light at the end is not... the new one.
No,
I think most of the films which show us the process have it, and a lot of people tell that they've seen this kind of corridor, so I knew about it. But sometimes people tell that they open their eyes in the world and they see them
themselves
lying on a bed with doctors surrounding them, so it's some kind of a popular idea that we have. I don't know, maybe it happens. There is always some hope for me that maybe there is the difference between a body and some kind of a soul, maybe, or some spiritual thing that we have inside. So maybe it's possible. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that there's this religious aspect, because we talked about it, don't really support any kind of religion.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that probably there is some difference, something that doesn't die after death.
I believe in reincarnation.
Oh, that's a nice idea too, yeah.
Yes, that my soul will go out of me when I die, and it will go in some embryo, and the soul will be born again. I don't know whether it will be another me or another person, but I believe that some amount of same spiritual substances, they have been circling around.
Do you get, does this soul get more experience? Does it get wiser with the number of lives it has?
I believe it doesn't. It only explains the deja vu feeling we have sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched the film with...
The Cloud Atlas?
And, well, the Cloudy Atlas, I think we all watched, but I mean, the Birth with Nicole Kidman?
No.
Oh, you do have to watch it. It's a bit strange, but I like it. It's about a young boy,
mm-hmm.
about 7 years old, who claims that he is the reincarnated husband of one widow.
Uh-huh.
So he comes into her life and he gives some very personal information, which only her husband knew.
Mm-hmm.
And finally she starts believing that he is her husband, who is just 7 or 6, something like that. So that's it's
weird.
I liked this film because it just shows the woman's feelings,
mm-hmm.
From the inside, how what she's experiencing, what she's feeling when she can't believe her eyes, but
mm-hmm.
Logically it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, just you can watch it.
I don't want to remember anything about my previous reincarnation. Suppose I am reincarnated. I do not want to remember anything about my thing.
Why not? Maybe you want to have some experience. Maybe
yeah. to be born with the knowledge of English.
not theoretical. Just
mm-hmm.
To get some lesson from your life, like you've lived 70
oh,
years
oh.
and you have learned a lesson.
Learning new lessons is
it's fun. Making new mistakes,
it's
fun, yeah, of course. But
it will
drive a person crazy remembering something he cannot explain.
But you can have this more developed intuition. You don't have to remember the facts or names or faces. You can just have this intuition that there are certain things that you should do.
Intuition is good.
Maybe intuition is the reason, the result of reincarnation.
Yeah.
But you know what? you know what upsets me is that our lives are so short. That's
mm-hmm.
that's what I've been thinking about. What's that? 80 years?
Mm-hmm.
80
years
yeah. max, yeah. And you are making so many mistakes during your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're meeting so many wrong people. People who eventually go out of your life and
mm-hmm.
they leave nothing. And it seems to be pointless. And then when you're finally know a little bit about life, when you
mm-hmm.
finally can say that, well, okay, now I know what I should do, well, it's time for you to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes you even don't say goodbye, you just go. And it's like, well, what's the purpose of this 80 years
mm-hmm.
of life then?
As you say, for example, if we have also this information, it won't be like this Groundhog Day, when you know that there are certain ways to avoid certain mistakes, and you just make the day perfect. And then it repeats again. Yes, I guess it would be very boring.
But you are on the next level. You are not placed in the same reality again. You
mm-hmm.
are, it's like a computer game. It's like a video game. You're on the next level. You have new challenges.
Well, I don't know. Because
I
think that most of the lives of people, they're quite similar. You are born, and what else can
okay,
you do?
Well,
life?
Next time you are born,
you become
a
president.
Family, no. More complicated.
Okay.
So if this time you were born in Russia and
mm-hmm.
so you've had a pretty decent life.
Yeah.
But next time you are born in a starving family in Africa, you have to fight for every piece of bread.
Okay.
so it's more complicated, you know.
I agree. Then yeah, that becomes interesting.
So
then.
And finally if you succeed and
mm-hmm.
you survive, then next time you are placed somewhere else. so I don't know.
Yeah. That's a very good idea for a game.
For a simulation
like a
game.
Some people think that there is nothing after death, and I just cannot put up with it. One of my friends is certain that there will be nothing after his death.
He has some proof, maybe.
No.
How can you even prove of it?
He's just an atheist, and he supposes so.
Yeah,
consciousness ceases to exist. I cannot put up with it. It can kill me.
I'm not denying
mm-hmm.
or I'm not supporting any view, but
mm-hmm.
I agree that there is a possibility of reincarnation
mm-hmm.
and there is a possibility
sure.
of nothingness,
mm-hmm.
actually. You just die and that's it.
Yep.
Because, okay, I'm talking about these souls. A lot of people think that animals do not have consciousness and soul,
mm-hmm.
and when they die, they just die. But I, having a dog, I absolutely can't put up with this.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that my dog is very special and I like her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't like the idea that she doesn't have a soul. She just, you know, a set of instincts and habits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this idea. So, and from this point of view, I think that, well, of course we do. We all have souls. We are also special. And when we die, something has to happen, mm-hmm. and we have to be reincarnated or something like that. But I don't know, maybe there is nothing.
It's a question of belief, because we don't really have a proof of what happens to you after death. So it's a personal choice, because if you want to believe in it, but please do. But if you think that there is nothing,
well, you can't believe in nothingness.
How is it to believe in nothingness? You have to believe in something, not in nothing.
Well, nothing is something.
I guess
nothing is not something.
I think it's a personal choice. You can't force a person to believe.
You
that
can't definitely.
There is it. Yeah.
The point is, you have to. If you believe in something, mm-hmm. then you have to have some reasons for that.
I don't know. How can you base faith on something?
But
can you
for example, if you believe in nothingness, it's also faith.
This is a kind of religion.
Yeah. If we start from
atheism,
this.
Yeah,
it's a kind of philosophy. It's
sure, yeah,
and
there is even a church of
should,
atheism. Actually,
there should
church.
Be some kind of basis for atheism. For
yeah, I think it's atheism is based on pure
logic.
Logic,
yeah, logic
and
but
and
sometimes it's not logical to not
science.
Believe in.
I guess you can't look for logic in faith in religion. You look for facts. I don't know.
Well, maybe not facts, but maybe logic. Okay, we are having a way too serious matter.
Yeah.
So okay, and I think it's endless.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Believing in nothingness, it's like division by zero. It doesn't make sense. You cannot divide by zero because.
Why not?
Well, I read about it recently, and there is an explanation, a logical explanation, why you cannot divide by zero, because an act of division by zero doesn't make any sense. No philosophical, no mathematical. No,
I could never understand that in math classes. Like, okay, you have five apples, and nobody takes these apples.
Mm-hmm.
So you divide by zero, so you still have your apples.
Yeah, you divide by one. Because there is you.
No, just apples on the tree somewhere. Just apples, and there is no owner of these apples.
So these apples don't make sense unless there is an owner.
Does it mean that everything on this planet belongs to someone?
It does, actually. It makes sense only when it belongs.
That's another philosophical aspect. I can't give you a definite answer right now.
Imagine some natural miracle, some beautiful lagoon. Unless a person sees it. It doesn't make any sense. It's just there, and the person sees it and he thinks, well, what a wonderful thing.
So basically, the prism of everything is the
human being.
But why can't we judge everything through another prism? Let's talk about a dog,
mm-hmm.
or let's talk about a chair.
Mm-hmm.
So from the point of view of a human,
yes.
There is this lagoon, but from
yeah.
the point of view of a chair, there is no lagoon. Okay,
but
a
chair doesn't have a mind.
Okay, a dog.
A dog does.
I guess.
And my dog sees things. I told you about that. She sees certain things, yeah. So maybe from her point of view, there are creatures.
I didn't deny that, of course. I meant sentient creatures or souled creatures.
I'm just saying that this kind of prism, the human
mm-hmm.
being,
mm-hmm.
Is not absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot deny the possibility of alternative realities.
Well, as long as we're on animals, there is a news about them.
So smooth.
Yes, I like the smooth
transition.
Yeah.
How do scientists amuse themselves? Breed glowing animals.
Oh.
Numerous experiments have been done, as a result of which were born cockroaches, flies, mice, pigs, and recently rabbits that glow green. The color is green because one of the ingredients of the experiment was a jellyfish's DNA. The other one is the animal's embryo. It is taken from the mother, endowed with the blueprint of DNA, and then put back. The recently bred rabbits differ from the previous creatures in that they glow in the dark, while their predecessors glowed under special frequencies of light. The purpose of the experiment isn't to launch a new trend among pet lovers, it is to understand how genetic engineering can work. In the future, scientists will presumably inject into female embryos of any animal DNA with medical qualities, so that it will be possible to extract molecules with these qualities from their milk.
That's nice to have a glowing rabbit. A green cat.
It can grow commercial with time.
But you can't switch it off, right?
No,
it's always glowing.
You want to have a control over your pet?
You have to have a button. On off.
You lost your key somewhere in the darkness.
Yeah.
August.
Let's turn. Yeah, there is this thing. Yeah, when they turn on the light with the when you clap your hand.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you
clap yeah.
hands. August glows green in the dark, and you finally see your keys.
Yeah. It's
so
very,
at least
very convenient.
Yeah, at least if that happened, so my cat would have some kind of a purpose in life, some kind of a meaning.
The idea of control of a sentient being is not good, Andish. You're an evil person.
I am. I never denied it.
It can have some consequences, maybe in future, like this species may have some health problems or some other complications.
But maybe it's in some distant future, because these experiments have been done already since 2005.
Maybe. I'm not saying
so
that.
The lifespan of a dog or a cat is 10 to 15 years. No harming consequences.
But maybe the future generations will have some complications.
You mean those that come from those?
From them, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, if you take a dog for breeding, maybe. But if you take a dog just for companion,
it's interesting.
Nothing bad.
Yeah.
Scorpions. Some have scorpions as
Yeah.
Do they live long?
What is the purpose of having
it's
the scorpion?
Then to make vodka with the scorpion.
Rice vodka. Come.
Come on, get in the bottle.
Get in the bottle, yeah. You're gonna love it.
It's a swimming session for you.
Yeah. You can drink while you swim.
Yeah.
How long can you hold your breath?
Anyway, so the case of the lost sausage, part 3. Is it? Am I right?
I'm all ears.
Oh, okay. Do they know who was with him that night, detective? Asked Asia. We questioned the man at the reception. He says the girl was tall, blonde, with heavy makeup, and looked like, quote, your average Brooklyn hooker. That's very helpful, said Asia. Just what we need, detective. I'm sure your guys have already found her and are on their way here, because she sounds so conspicuous. Hookers are hookers, Asia, replied Detective Cooper to this outburst of sarcasm. It's part of their job. Is it mentioned in their resume? Said Asia, and left with Lola, who looked at her inquiringly. Oh, I know he's stupid, she said, but he's got enough wits not to forget to send us everything they found. We've already been through that. Do you think he would force us to go to his office again? Even Cooper is not so hopeless. To this, Lola just shook her head and continued down the hall with her friend. The room, which was supposed to be a think tank of the NYPD department where Detective Cooper lived each of his miserable 24 hours a day, was thoroughly and irrevocably filthy. Contrary to the common stereotype, Cooper despised donuts, and actually anything that came with a hole in it, including bagels, which for any proud New Yorker is equal to blasphemy, punishable by public beheading. He thought it was the baker's conspiracy to give less stuff for the same amount of money and cheat honest American citizens of their well-deserved everyday treats. So he refused to buy those under any circumstances, however hungry or sugar-deprived he was, just out of pure spite, and decided to stick with muffins and Subway sandwiches. So the whole office seemed to be drowning in leftover bags, napkins, and crumbs. The first time Asya and Lola came to this stinking place, they were utterly disgusted. Now it seemed normal. On the contrary, if it were not dirty, that would be a sign of an upcoming apocalypse, no more nor less. Are you telling me you have found no DNA other than that of this poor half-wit of a mayor? Asya carefully removed the suspiciously looking paperback and an already yellow newspaper page from the chair and sat down. Doesn't it sound unusual to you, keeping in mind what he was up to? I see your point, Isa, replied Cooper. But we got nothing. According to the analysis, he was alone. That's insane, James, exclaimed Isa. A hooker who left no DNA? Perhaps she didn't enter the room after all. Isa was lost in thought for a moment. Okay, what about the post-mortem? Ah, that's where the things get interesting, said detective and handed her the report. The more she read, the more acute her astonishment became. And I thought I have seen it all, muttered the girl. And you're telling me that there was no one else in the room with him. I agree, it's unusual. But hey, when did we ever have anything not unusual? The whole city is a bunch of lunatics. He sounded weary, but continued all the same. Some of the internal organs are missing, but mostly it's just one big mush. The stomach and intestines are intact. Detective looked strangely at the dog and added, I hope he had enjoyed his lasagna. Lola was already at the door. Asya gave him a curt nod with meaningless thank you, Cooper, and followed suit.
Not much of Lola this time.
No.
Not much, yes.
not much, but it's coming. But right. I guess, yeah, it's subtext.
Of course. So. I have a very rich imagination.
So,
thank you for listening to us.
Yes.
And, yeah.
So, anyway,
so
thank you.
Let's go.
Yeah,
let's go. Then.
Lots of books and discussions at www.lingvistov.ru.